we present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the ninth man. The Ninth Man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Max.
Thursday, June 18th, 1942. The president waited in his wheelchair in the porch of the Hyde Park estate as the caravan of cars came to a stop and doors swung open all up and down the line, disgorging a retinue of splendid uniforms and men in striped trousers, a virtual catalogue of well-dressed Britishers dressed to fit the solemnity of the occasion, save one. From the lead car bounded a short, chubby man in a pair of overalls, a pale blue jumpsuit which bagged at the waist. He grinned around an enormous cigar and brushed forward, ignoring protocol to embrace the president. The band broke off the Sousa tune and launched into the British anthem. It was a great moment of historical significance, and I stood rigidly to attention through the playing of both anthems before forcing myself to turn back to the security aspects of my job. For a few moments, my eyes fell on a face in the British ranks. The face of a man I had met at one of the diplomatic functions. A man who had been very attractive to Gay. I guess it made me very uncomfortable to think that she might have been very attractive to him as well. I had certainly gained that impression. She and I had had words about it later. During those few moments that my mind had wandered, I was somewhat shaken when I looked again at the porch and saw the President and Prime Minister had already gone inside. As I recovered my composure, I was rather put out to see Calhoun, Secret Service chief, and one of his younger men, walking determinedly towards me across the lawn, a meeting I'd hoped to avoid during the Hyde Park visit.
Captain, I've been wanting to talk to you. Are you responsible for what has been going on around here? Are you responsible for that?
I don't understand. Could you be more specific? Am I responsible for what?
The band. Did you arrange to have them brought up here?
No, sir, not exactly. I okayed it, but the request came from one of the presidential assistants.
Well, why didn't you tell me about it?
Why should I? What difference does it make?
It makes a great deal of difference. They are a security problem. Haven't we enough strangers cluttering up the landscape without you bringing a whole busload up here for my men to watch?
It's the same band that always plays for the president.
It may be the same band, but they do occasionally take on new members, you know. How can we check them out when you don't even tell us they're coming?
I'm sorry, no one told me you would want to check them out.
If you had any security background, Captain Blazek, you would have figured that out for yourself. Political dilettantes, Fenton. God protect us from dilettantes with political connections.
Now, hold on. Maybe I wouldn't cause so much trouble if someone in your office would let me know what's going on. We got left off your memo list again this week.
So I heard. An oversight, nothing more.
Yes, sir. Some oversight. It's happened several times in a row. How can we coordinate with you when we have to work in the blind?
Perhaps you should find another way to keep abreast of developments, Captain. I haven't got time to chase down memos and make sure they reach every unimportant office in the White House.
You needn't concern yourself. Several officers rerouted their copies to us, figuring we were the most logical place for them. Besides, there wasn't much that was new in the memos anyway. Mainly a rehash of what my office had already proposed.
May I ask what you mean by that?
Nothing. Only that if we'd been on your list, we could have come up with some improvements.
I'm sorry you don't approve of my methods, Captain. But then the safety of the President is my concern, not yours.
I disagree. As long as we use military guards here at the White House, it's our concern, too. And it's important that we be kept informed.
I'll look into the memo situation, Captain. I wouldn't want to offend the military. I wouldn't want to offend your sponsors, either. I don't like to offend anybody. Never know when they might come in handy. You might give that some thought yourself, just in case your influential friends ever decide to start pulling strings for you.
That was a dumb move, Blazek. A dumb move.
I didn't do anything. Besides, he started it. What's he talking about, anyway? What's this bull about influential friends?
Come on. Calhoun sent for a copy of your service record a few weeks ago. You've got a big capital P marked right across the first page.
A capital P?
Sure. Political influence. Someone apparently turned a few screws to get you your job at the White House. What is it, Blazek? You got an uncle in the Senate or something?
No, of course not. Besides, what the hell is Calhoun doing sending for my records? I thought they were supposed to be confidential.
Not when you work in the White House, and Calhoun is the Secret Service chief. Anyway, he was already peeved about you in that new office of yours. He thinks it's some kind of reflection on his ability. Look, Blazek, maybe you're not interested in advice, but I've got some for you. Calhoun isn't really a bad egg. He's kind of a nice old guy when you get to know him. When you get used to him, if you like to put it that way. Otherwise, you might find yourself frozen out completely one of these days.
Fat chance. I don't think he could freeze me out any colder than I already am.
You think not. Don't kid yourself. Those memos were just a little test of authority. He hasn't even touched his big guns. For example, how much have you heard about the spy landing?
Spy landing? What spy landing?
See what I mean? See, some things are too sensitive to get routed around by memo. The only way you'll ever hear about them is straight from Calhoun himself. And that means that you're going to have to mend your ways.
Oh, wait a minute. Back up, will you? What spy landing?
Oh, it's just a little flurry down in Long Island. Some Coast Guard kid says he ran into them on one of the local beaches last week.
What?
From a submarine, he claims. Oh, the FBI is working on it.
Oh, great. The FBI is working on it. But why the hell wasn't I told?
Because you irritate Calhoun, that's why. Besides, there may not be anything in it. You know those Coast Guard people. Not enough to do, so they compensate.
But spies, at a time like this, with the Prime Minister coming out and all, I should have been told. There are no two ways about it.
There's nothing to get worked up about. It doesn't concern you. Nor us, for that matter. Even if it is for real. Let the FBI handle it. It's their problem, not ours. Mm. Oh, well. Time marches on, as they say. I've got to do my rounds. Think it over, chum. You know the old saying about honey and vinegar? We'll try to be polite to Calhoun if you want him to cooperate.
Cooperate, he says. Cooperate. Hell's teeth. Spies. From a submarine? On Long Island? It's less than 100 miles away. And nobody has even bothered to tell me. It's just plain bloody unbelievable.
Conditions in wartime, sort of calculations I have to make. However, I And I have a pretty good idea of how long it takes each train to get to this point from Philadelphia. Just by checking my watch, I should be able to identify any train on schedule. Once the two teams have arrived, I can set them about their tasks. I can have a man some 20 miles up the line, far enough to recognize the engine number on the presidential train when it passes, and get word to the assault sections that it's on its way. One must leave nothing to chance.
Nothing to chance, eh? We were very impressed with what you did in England. Up there, one are very proud of the way you handled your first mission.
But it was a bit of a mess of a slight non-greatness.
True, but not your fault that your assistant's English was not as good as it should have been.
Now, let's just answer one or two questions, eh? Quite simple, really. That's all we ask. What were you two...
You could have panicked. But your partner reported, however reluctantly, that you took the initiative and killed the soldiers who intercepted you. Things could have been a great deal worse if you had not reacted so quickly and efficiently. I don't have to tell you that there is much you can do for the Reich. This is only the beginning. But first, you will have to learn to...
Live alone. Think alone.
Train under experts who have studied even greater experts. Charles Guiteau, Leon Zogeltz, Gabriel Princep, Joseph Sangar. Outsiders all, seedy, unbalanced men who blazed their way to a certain place in history with handguns and the bombs of anarchy. You did a wonderful job on that politician in Wexford. However did you learn of his weakness for pornography? That illustrated manuscript was quite an idea. Open it up to take a look. There is a man in Algiers, a fetuous Vichy French admiral. We suspect him of treating with American military intelligence agents.
How is our man doing, Oberst-Leutnant Gürzner?
Excellently, mein General. He kills coldly and purposefully, without fuss or hesitation. What we ask him to do, he does with cold efficiency. Quite different when compared with his first mission, when he acted in the course of self-preservation. Switzerland. Zagreb. Passing yourself off as an American OSS advisor, I was worried for you, for us, but you executed that guerrilla chieftain brilliantly. How you got through the communications roadblocks, I cannot imagine, but you did. Now we have something of great import for you to do. I think the most important thing in your life and of the utmost urgency to the future of Germany.
What is it?
We have tentatively concluded that you are capable of carrying out a plan that will nudge the United States out of the war.
That's a pretty tall order. How? How can anyone accomplish that?
By accomplishing the demise of America's head of state, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Well, petty assassinations are one thing, but an assault on a head of state is another. Well, why me?
Because of your command of the American idiom. Because you have lived in America and know her customs. Because you are an excellent marksman, an inventive problem solver, and have proven yourself an attentive student in all phases of your training. Because we are now of the opinion that you are the perfect man for the job.
May I ask why you feel that anyone, myself included, can succeed at such a task?
It will be far easier than you think.
May I ask why you think so?
Because any man at all, can kill a head of state if he is willing to die himself. History is filled with the proofs. Shall I give you a few?
Please.
You have read quite a few of them yourself recently. Alexander II of Russia, struck down by a member of a terrorist group. French President Sadi Carnot, assassinated by an Italian anarchist. Umberto I of Italy, who survived two assassination attempts and fell victim to a third. King Alexander and Queen Draga of Serbia, killed by a dissident military clique. Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife, murdered on the streets of Sarajevo by a Serbian nationalist. American leaders seem particularly vulnerable. American presidents Abraham Lincoln, James Garfield, and William McKinley, shot and killed in turn by a Confederate activist, an embittered office seeker, and an anarchist terrorist. Even Roosevelt himself was a target. In 1933, shortly after his election, he came under the gun of an anarchist in Miami. Some foolish woman intervened and seized the anarchist's arm as he fired. The bullet struck the Bürgermeister of Chicago, a hapless individual by the name of Zermak, and he died instead. Otherwise, the Americans might never have been misled into joining this war. This mission is the mission for which you have been training since the very beginning.
Yes, I think I am beginning to understand.
It is my belief that assassination is simple if the assassin is dedicated. True, most of the ones I have cited died shortly after they delivered their blows. Some by their own hands, some gunned down by the victim's bodyguards, some even torn apart by frenzied crowds. But they proved again and again that no man is safe from an assassin's bullet if the assassin makes a determined assault. But I am making it sound a lot more morbid than necessary. There is still more training for you to undergo, and there is no reason at all to assume that you cannot return safely to Germany. This we must allow for and plan for. Our timing must be right.
Yes, Oberstleutnant Grützner, but our timing was off for any tidy arrangement for the timely death of the American president. Was it only last month that I was called into your office? Everything happened so fast.
You will have to leave immediately for the naval base at Lorient. Word has filtered through from England that Winston Churchill is to visit the United States to confer with Roosevelt. Imagine, one hated prime minister and one key president in the same place at the same time. It's too good an opportunity to miss. We can't let it pass. Also, 8 Abwehr sabotage men are on the verge of being shipped out to the United States. You can put them to good use. It's a golden opportunity. Wir haben Glück. 2 Fliegen mit einer Klappe geschlagen.
Luck? No, I won't depend on luck. When the curling and dash teams arrive tomorrow, or the next day, I'll show them their responsibilities. Once the bridge is wired, I'll split them up. 2 men to the north to block the road to Churchville. A slightly larger group, perhaps 3 men, to cover the crossroads to the south, where they can make sure no one from those 2 farmhouses can interfere once the countdown begins. 1 man in Providence, up the line to watch for the train. The other 2 will stay with me up here, on the hill where we can mop up any pertinent survivors once the train has been hit. After that, the men on the roadblocks can pull back to the bridge, giving me a 3-way crossfire. Should be easy. Even if there are survivors, they're bound to be badly shaken, perhaps dying. We can sweep in quickly before the shock wears off and apply the coup de grâce. Make certain that the 2 major figures are thoroughly and completely out of it. Right. I think the sketch is about complete, but I'll have to fill the details in later when I come back for a closer look. For breaching, the charges should probably be placed under the ties. This point here, and here, and there. And also a charge under the piers for good measure. To work out a formula. Wire them in common series or in a parallel circuit? Parallel, probably. Now, let's see. On the basis of the earlier trains and the time it took them to get here, that would probably be about 12:15 out of Philadelphia. Now, checking the timetable for southbound trains. The steamer departure. 12:17. Good. Very good. Quite close. What more can I hope for?
It is a pity we had to spend the whole of yesterday in Jacksonville, but it was absolutely necessary in order to make our arrangements. Today we split up and head north as instructed. Herbert, you and Otto must leave in good time to catch the 2 o'clock bus for Chicago.
I keep wondering how the other four are. They could not know that we were delayed 3 days.
Stop worrying. They won't act without receiving the signal. It's amazing. They're half asleep in this country. We cruise in from the U-boat, bury our cache of explosives in the Pontevedra dunes, and enjoy a midnight dip in the Florida surf. If the positions were reversed, could you imagine our getting away with this in Germany? There's no reason to suppose that it was any more difficult for our colleagues on the U-202.
Things are so easy going here that one would hardly think there was a war going on. Yeah?
Before we've been here much longer, they'll know all about it. Of that you can be sure. I'm quite looking forward to going into action. Now, because we're running late, I'm dishing out some of the money. I'm sure I don't need to remind you that we must be careful how we spend it.
No.
Being away from home for 12 months is a long time, Herbert. Are you sure your parents will accept your story about being in Mexico?
Yeah. Under the circumstances, they'll realize it was either that or my being a father. Apart from that, they'll be delighted to have me back home.
You're no stranger to Chicago, Otto. Just make sure you maintain contact with Haupt if you decide to change your hotel for any reason.
Yes, of course.
Werner and I will leave for New York an hour after you by train. I propose to find a centrally located hotel in Manhattan where Werner and I can settle into our roles as workaday Americans. As soon as the signal arrives, I'll send the family reunion telegram to your uncle. So be on the lookout for it, Herbert. From then on, you and Otto must rendezvous with us as soon as possible. Now, if there's nothing else, I think we'll have a drink to our success and be on our way.
Yeah.
What the four men of the Florida team had no way of knowing if they went their separate ways that day was that the signal they were waiting had already been transmitted. He finally got back to Mrs. McKinney's boarding house. But it had been a satisfactory trip.
Tomorrow I go back to Maryland for further study. It'll take time to lay the charges. But I think it would be best done at night. If for some unexpected reason time begins to crowd us, we can quite easily masquerade as workmen. They seem to be seldom questioned by anybody.
But the moment he closed the door, he knew something was wrong. The covers on the bed were rumpled. Not much, but enough. Someone had been in his room. He dropped the sketchbook and the railway timetables on one of the chairs and looked around.
Didn't I lock the door? Of course I did. Then who would want to come in here? Who would need to come in here? The landlady. Yes, sure. Who else? My bed was made. Why would you want to fuss with it? What the hell for?
An alarm began to burn at the back of his ears as he hurried over to the chest. Among his shorts and socks lay the clutter of his identification cards. They had been neatly stacked when he left. He was a tidy man, always had been. A legacy from his childhood and an aunt who considered cleanliness and neatness only one step removed from religion. And as a military man, he didn't make mistakes. There could only be one answer, Mrs. McKinney. And there could only be one solution.
That was episode 9 of The Ninth Man by John Lee, adapted and directed for broadcasting in 25 parts by Victor Magazine. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.